You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Oh! Wonderful shot by Lennox Lewis!
A right hand by Holyfield!
By Buster Douglas! Look at this! He's knocked Mike Tyson down for the first time in his career!
But unfortunately, it'll never happen.
Frotch! Punches! It punches! And it's over!
I think it's gonna be over.
Aguero in big trouble against the ropes!
I have to say, there seems an element of genuine hate between these two, Ambrose.
For sure. I don't hate the man.
Just imagine if you bought a ticket. Stop it, Frank. You can stop it any time.
Castillo's in trouble. Weak steps in, and the fight is over.
Oh! You got to know him.
Welcome back to the Legendary Knights After Show. This is the after show for Mikayla versus Errol Christie, a tale which certainly brought some stories that are very topical stories, very relevant and current in terms of what goes on in the world in 2024. And as always, I'm joined by Luke here, who prior to coming on this show and doing this episode in particular, had no clue about this fight. And it's a really interesting conversation to have with yourself on this episode, Lukey, because when you get a fight which seemingly is, in the grand scheme of things, is insignificant across the world, it sort of gives you the stories behind it, which maybe you can compare to other situations in life, personally, or even what you've seen locally, regionally, nationally, within America over the years. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your perspective on what you took away from listening to this episode and sort of dissecting it down and making those comparisons to what life is like in America and how things like this are just so prevalent in society in general, even still now, even all those years after the fact. You know, we're 39 years on from this fight, and yet a lot of these social, economic and racial issues are still here today.
The more we change, the less we change, you know. Everything seems to stay the same. Topics of controversy seem to always be the same, and it always, what did they say? I guess I'm going to quote a line from the Zodiac Killer movie, which isn't a great thing to quote a serial killer, but the man is the most dangerous animal of all. And I think stories about racism and stories about injustice, always, there's always a figure that gives you hope, but it always shows you, sadly, that there's always someone that's going to allow bigotry and hatred to still thrive.
So going back to this story then, Luke, I'm really interested to hear a lot of the different moments and how you perceive them. So forgive me for leaning a lot on you for this episode, because I'm really interested to hear your take on kind of how certain moments played out throughout the course of this particular story. So in the grand scheme of things, this wasn't a significant fight because it was an eliminator for a British title, which in comparison to the US is kind of like a state title, maybe an area title, so to speak, because there's such a vast variety of different places within the US in comparison to our little island here in the UK. It's, in the grand scheme of things, it's like a drop in the ocean. However, in the UK, it became such a big thing. It became such a big moment because of the societal issues that were going on at the time, which is what we covered in the episode about how riots had been sparked by individual incidents which had caused certain minded people to want to go out there and use those particular incidents as an excuse to maybe push their own agendas out there. And this fight kind of bleeds completely beyond boxing for me, looking back at it in hindsight, because it is all about like the societal issues, the racism, poverty, everything that was going on within the UK in the mid-1980s, the difficulties that people were facing on a day-to-day basis, not too dissimilar from how people are struggling today, to be honest, in the UK. But still, back then, it was even more difficult for people that lived through that moment. So when you listen to the stories of, obviously, the racism that Errol Christie faced, living in Coventry, living in his part of the UK, no matter where he went, he was always fighting. No matter where he went, he was always victimized in some way, shape or form. But yet boxing was a way of him being able to escape those moments. And some of the most notable things that he did, of course, which will resonate with you, Lukey, is of course the fact that he ended up in the Kronk gym for a period of time. And one of the things I took away from it was I just wondered why he never stayed, wondered why he never sort of relocated. And it made me wonder, like, what sort of a fighter could he have been if he would have stayed with Emmanuel Stewart in a Kronk gym, which was an absolute hotbed in the 1980s. So, Lukey, your thoughts initially on maybe Errol Christie's struggle in his journey to get him to the point of the fight with Mark Kayla?
Well, to me, the word, I did a lot of reading on this and I listened to the podcast. You very rarely see people describe someone as a sweet man and a boxer. Yet that was still the vibe that I got was there was a beloved nature to his character. I think that it's really hard to break out of what you're comfortable with. Like if you said, hey, you can be a $1 million writer and video guy, but you have to live in Liverpool for 5 years. I mean, most people would be like, heck yeah, just do it. But then like what happens if one of my family members passes away? What happens if I don't get to eat my favorite sandwich? What happens if this? I think the creature comforts of life often stop us. And I think that sadly, what was it, 40 so years ago, life was so much different. The internet has changed things. The internet has in many ways brought us together for better or worse. And this story also felt to me in the buildup as a very pre-internet fighter's development.
Well, of course it was, because we look at this fight in particular and think about the potential of what it would have done today. And I know both, I think it was Mark and both Errol said the same thing when they were put on a show a few years back where they were asked about this fight and the significance of it at that time. And even now today, if this fight was around, I think this probably would have piqued the interest of people like yourself, Lukey, who covers a lot of UK boxing as well as everything on your home turf. And I think this type of a fight would have stoked the fire, and it probably would have been viral. Like the moment in the press conference outside where they're having a photo shoot, and you know, he whispers supposedly in his ear a racist slur, and that kicks off. And you know, those type of moments, they become complete viral videos, don't they? And as a result of that, that then sells a fight. It makes the casual audience want to tune into something, even if they don't necessarily follow the sport, but like to tune in for moments to see what's actually going to happen. And it's kind of in comparison to, you know, like modern day moments where, you know, you get, God forbid, a YouTube boxer who creates that much traction in what he's doing, that he ends up fighting a professional boxer. And the world wants to see whether the YouTube boxer will topple the professional boxer and whether he'll cause, you know, a huge upset and a huge ripple in the wave of the sport. And I'm not comparing this fight to that, but what I'm making the point of is if Mark Kayla versus Errol Christie was around today in 2024 and the underlying tones of what was going on surrounding that fight was happening today, it would have been a much, much bigger fight despite the level of accolade that was involved in it, or the lack of accolade that was involved in the fight, it would have become a much more pertinent fight and probably would have made them a hell of a lot more money. However, they did make quite a bit of money for the time, for the type of fight it was. But would it have been one of those, Lukey? You know, if you look at this now and you look at what you cover and how you perceive things that come from the UK, if you would have seen this, you would have probably been like, this is one I want to cover. This is one I really want to go for, isn't it?
Well, I think also, like, given since I've been lucky enough to start working at Pro Box, and then you have, like, these great boxing writers, people I looked up to, like Tris Dixon and Declan Warrington and Alan Dawson, working there, it's like I feel like I'm an American, but I also am, like, on the British boxing beat because I'm just immersed with kind of the great boxing minds of Britain. So I feel like I'd like to preface that, not to brag, but to basically say, okay, I think I'm a hard American to ask this because I feel like I'm really excited about Bwatsi Dan Aziz. And I feel like there's not a lot of Americans that are like, I can't wait to see this great London fight. But I think that a fight that has a natural element that carries over to life and the issues that we strongly feel about, those are the fights that I'm most interested in because I think the fights that get me going are fights that have legacy involved. How will someone deal with defeat? How will they deal with the pressure in the moment in this fight? Given the sensitive nature and subjects around it, I think you wanted to see the outcome and you kind of wanted to see almost justice done in the ring. So for me, I would definitely be a keen observer if I had a time machine and didn't know the outcome and went back and was a part of this.
One of the comparisons that I remember covering in the Legendary Nights show, which was on a much larger scale than this fight, was doing the tale of Joe Louis and Max Schmeling and how significant of a fight that was, because that wasn't just, you know, white versus black in terms of the racial element of it. That was also white versus black, and that was also country versus country, the USA versus Germany. It was, you know, the strong superior USA forces versus the Nazis, and how significant that fight was, and the fact that the victory for Joe Louis did so much to really put people in such a great mindset. Going back to this fight in particular, though, because that's a huge, huge fight, of course. Going back to this one in particular, I think what was so big about it in the 1980s and would be massive today is the issues, the societal issues that are really a big part of this story for me. When we put into context what was going on within the sport of football or soccer, as you guys know it, you know, there was a lot of hooliganism going on. There was a lot of different far-right groups that had their own agendas and ideologies of how people should live and what they should look like and what the colour of the skin should be and all these different ideologies that were around at the time, probably more so than what there are today. There were so many different ideologies that people believed in. It created all these different facets and groups of people within the UK that ultimately became opportunists when the moment came for them to strike, which was what all these riots eventually turned out to be about. They used an excuse of an individual being hurt or killed or even murdered to be able to push their own agendas and cause complete havoc. And what this particular fight then did was it was like the cherry on the cake. It was the moment where you were putting two guys in there that genuinely went on to despise each other, and then you had the racial element of it being a white man versus a black man, and then you had these groups of football hooligans that supported Mark Kaler in particular because he was an advocate of his football team, West Ham, at that time, and you had all that bled into it, which made it even bigger for people at the time and even bigger of a talking point. Are there any particular moments in boxing history in the US, or even maybe in sports history, not just boxing history, that you can honestly remember or think of that would give it a similar comparison to what plays into something like this fight?
Well, there's one in the US that I think is somewhat like this, but it's different, and it would be Jerry Cooney, Larry Holmes, but it's not at all because of Jerry Cooney. He was kind of a guy that's like, hey, the Ku Klux Klan is doing a rally about me, but I don't support the Ku Klux Klan. It became a racially divided fight around the promotion which basically pitted a white guy against a black guy, which then got basically hate groups invested in the fight. And Cooney was kind of sitting on the sidelines being like, I don't like where this is going, but it was going. I think for me, the nearest comparison I could think when I was listening to this was Alan Minter versus Marvin Hagler, which is another British fight. But there was a lot of racial undertones that I think shaped the bitterness of Hagler in his career from, let's just say what it was, the racism of Alan Minter and the buildup to that fight, which historians bring up, but it goes largely untold in the Hagler story. I think the Hagler story is he had a chip on his shoulder and this and that, but they don't talk about the racism and the bad decisions he faced to become the frustrated Hagler that we all remember. So those are my probably two examples of things that had the context of this fight, though they're not exactly the same.
Well, the comparison of Alan Minter and Hagler is it was like a prelude to Mark Kaler versus Errol Christie. And I know we talked about that in the podcast, and we mentioned that because it was, you know, we had that fight and Marvin Hagler became the champion for the first time, and yet he wasn't able to celebrate the way he should have been able to celebrate because of the white racist football hooligans that were in Wembley Arena that night that caused him to have to be escorted out of the place. And then there was obviously also the comment from Alan Minter about how he'll never let a black man take a title from him. So with all that in mind, yes, it created straight away that moment and that mindset within white British football hooligan fans that, you know, whenever you pitted a white guy against a black guy, whether it be two British guys or whether it be a black American versus a white British fighter.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All that was going to happen is the football hooligans were going to fill these arenas, these venues, and just be there for one sole purpose, which was to ridicule, to be racist, to attack, to just do things that were going to cause complete havoc. And that's exactly what happened in the Marvin Hagler Alan Minter fight. But it's a really good description that you've made there about how people don't really speak about that in the career of Marvin Hagler, in that sense that it kind of set him on a path at that moment when he becomes champion to become this vengeful, spiteful fighter that he goes on to become, and also a fighter that always felt like he had that, like you said, chip on his shoulder all the time. No matter what he did, he achieved great things in the sport. But yeah, even still, it always felt like he had something on that shoulder of his, even when he reached the pinnacle of his career, even when, you know, he has the fantastic fight in the same year as Kaler and Christie, of course, 1985. And yeah, it's a good point that you raise, and how the Hagler and Minter moment, as we said in the pod, was a prelude to what was about to come alongside the other issues in society that started to build it up to a point where it became what it was. And the Kaler versus Christie fight, I don't think it would have been as drama-filled if there wasn't that moment in the photo shoot where there's the racist slur remark, which Mark Kaler denies to this day, he says. And that moment, that footage, what you could see on your TV screen at that time was what created that hype around what people wanted to see. And I said it earlier about casual fans that maybe not necessarily are tuned into the sport of boxing, but they see two guys brawling and they are white and black, and all of a sudden their prejudice takes over. They don't care about the fact that it's a certain sport. A lot of those people, a lot of those individuals around at that time, all they cared about was whether their guy, the white man, was going to beat the black man on the opposite side. They didn't care about the feelings of the other opponent in Errol Christie. All they cared about was seeing their guy win. And that's what bled into this fight in such a massive, massive way. And when I look back on it and I look at the hindsight element of what should have gone on at the time, it was like the people around them, the promotional companies, the managers, even the trainers, it's like they should have anticipated it, but they didn't. And Mark Haler constantly said at the end, look, someone wasn't doing the job. They shouldn't have let us go in this way, given what was going on, given how people felt at that time. And obviously the moment where Errol Christie believes he used a racist slur against him. So when you look back at these particular moments and everything that was surrounding society in the UK at that time, do you believe that maybe, just maybe, the people that were in charge of running this fight might have actually wanted that to happen because of the fact that it ended up creating more interest? Do you really think promoters in general are happy to do that? I know we've heard Don King do it in the Larry Holmes Jerry Cooney fight. He made it about race. But do you think in general that's something promoters and managers would latch onto in general, even today, just to kind of sell something to the casual audience?
I'm going to give an unpopular opinion. Okay, so this is just the way I feel. I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but this is the obligation. The obligation of the manager is to protect the fighter at all costs. They're the first line of defense. The obligation of the promoter is to put on an entertaining or good show that pulls money and revenue for shareholders. Sadly, I think ethics for many people go to the sidelines, and it comes down to how do we achieve that goal? When I was learning how to make films, you know how you create drama in a film? You bust out a gun. Oh my God, he's got the gun, and now you've got drama. So there was a joke. You can't have a gun in a scene because the gun comes out and all of a sudden there's drama. I feel like racial tension is one of these things where you can immediately play to people's inner fears one way or another and sell tickets that way. And I feel at times promoters look to promote, and they don't always look at what's the social issue at large, how does this shape society. And that's, I think, also why our sport is deemed kind of a freak show sport and kind of looked at as stupid at times, is because we don't have these ethical standards that maybe like the NBA or the NFL, or I would hope, I'm not as familiar, but the Premier League, I would hope that they have some things where they'd go, hey, this seems a little goofy. We need to address it. Boxing never seems to address issues that as a society we deem like that's not appropriate behavior. And that, I think that that's always been an issue with boxing, is people live vicariously through people's bad decisions in boxing. It's like a Grand Theft Auto sport. And that's kind of the appeal for some people. And I think some promoters go, let's just ramp that up more and more, because the viewership comes from people making bad decisions and ruining their lives.
Absolutely. And this certainly, it bled into it massively. And, you know, when you look at the sort of fight itself, and you go back to the fight itself, and it lived up to expectation, because both of them went down in the first round, which, you know, really then leads to think that this is going to be one hell of a fight. And I can imagine, just watching back on it, I can imagine how that must have felt being a fan, just maybe as a neutral, maybe not thinking about supporting one or the other, but thinking as a neutral fan, I can imagine that would have been absolutely fantastic to be a part of, in that sense that you got two guys that just had this bad blood between one another, and they go in the ring, the first round goes, and both of them hit the deck in the first round, and it then creates what you expect to end up becoming such a great and maybe legendary fight, although it doesn't turn out to be a legendary fight, but it certainly lived up to the expectation of what people wanted to see in this fight. And the result, of course, was Mark Haler getting the victory. And I can imagine there were a lot of happy racist West Ham football fans at that time, a lot of just general racist white men that probably would have loved to have seen that moment happen, the fall of Errol Christie at that moment in time. And I can also imagine it probably led to more societal issues outside of the boxing ring in general communities, because I can imagine the mentality of people at the time was probably to prod fun and goad these people that were supporters of Errol Christie to cause more and more issues. And one of the big things about this fight that I was very surprised about, and I learned more about in doing the research for it, was that the lack of security like around the arenas and the venues in Britain in the 1980s. It was just like, when you look at what security is like today, we have certain security firms that are employed to manage the whole arenas and stadiums, and it runs like clockwork, and it's much, much better. And then you think about this moment where there's literally like nobody securing these venues, which is why things like Minter versus Hagler happened, because lack of security and lack of planning led to these moments. However, this particular fight was that racially charged that they needed to get a former football hooligan to bring in his own private team of individuals that could go in there and basically bully the bullies. It was like they were employed because they were like, you know, the lesser of two evils, so to speak. We'll get these guys in because we know these guys are not going to take that crap from those that are in the crowd. And because they are known football hooligans themselves, or former football hooligans, there's that perception of they're going to create this sort of barrier of individuals that these louts, these people that just want to cause havoc, were probably too scared to actually create that level of drama. And that reflects upon how, when the fight ends, there actually isn't any trouble at the arena or reported outside of the arena, which I found quite crazy that the lack of security was such a thing then. Like, when you look at it now, Luke, you think to yourself, wherever you go, security is such a big thing now. Whereas then, you literally, anybody could go in, and you probably wasn't searched. There was no metal detectors. There was nothing like that. Anything could have happened. And that was probably the ideal situation if you were one of those individuals that wanted to create havoc in.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite a situation. And I think that we can say things changed, but then look at rap music, right? A few years ago, Draco the Ruler, he does a concert in LA and gets murdered at the concert. And it's like, how does, like, everyone allegedly is saying they have rough ties to rough areas and their songs are very violent. How does any artist get in, or do people get into this venue with people that have any form of a weapon? How is metal detectors not a thing? And I feel like you brought up a great point about security, but I think security is an evolving thing. As I talk to people that do security for a living, there is a lot of vulnerabilities in our homeland and in your country. And just think about that from the best minds, right? The top of the food chain, protecting governing bodies, protecting society as a whole. There are weak spots that horrible people look to target on a daily basis. We don't need to get into that. But now work backwards and think about a sporting event for leisure. There's going to be soft spots. And I think as we evolve, we're going to look back at security over time and go, oh, that's what security looked like. Because security's never going to stay the same, is what I'm basically saying. Like, security's always going to ramp up more and more because there's people always looking to work around it. But I think it's shocking just how bad the security was for this.
So going back to the fight, going back to the outcome, of course, Errol Christie, we read quotes out from his book about the difficulties he was facing as a fighter at this point in time, how his body was systematically breaking down and how he could feel that happening. It was really insightful to hear his words literally come from the page as to how he was struggling during the course of that fight. And, you know, describing how the end came of a fight was quite an interesting bit of psychology. It was like you can kind of go into the mind of this individual at that moment in time and truly get a feeling of how difficult it is in what is the loneliest sport in the world for someone to sort of feel how your body's systematically breaking down and how your body cannot do what your mind is telling it to do. And seeing the fall of an individual like that in a boxing ring is quite difficult. And we've seen it many, many times over the years and many, many times in our lifetimes as being fans of this sport. It's so hard and difficult to watch a fighter systematically go down when you seemingly believe that this fighter is at the peak of their powers, and for them to be broken down and beaten in the way Errol Christie eventually gets stopped in this fight, and then hearing it in the aftermath of how difficult it was for him, you don't really appreciate it. I can imagine people didn't appreciate it at that time, how difficult it must have been for him, until, of course, he released his own memoirs years and years later about the difficulties he was facing health-wise when it came down to his body. And I think it's only then you truly appreciate what boxers do and what they provide to us, the entertainment they can provide to us at times, and the difficulties that they face on a day-to-day basis. And like when their body systematically breaks down after years of difficulties, whether it's substance abuse outside of the ring, alcohol abuse outside of the ring, just generally not looking after themselves and they break that down, or whether it's just an individual that his body's just naturally breaking down because it's just wear and tear on them. It is a sad story that doesn't really get too much coverage in terms of how difficult it really is, and how maybe society and fans of the sport don't really appreciate that until you hear something like that. Because you could get a fight and see a fighter that you really enjoy watching systematically get broken down in a fight, and automatically those so-called fans of that fighter will then, you know, change their allegiances and go, I don't like this fighter anymore, and curse them and say whatever they want to say about them. But then they don't realize until that individual, that fighter, then says, look, I had this problem, that problem, and actually it turns out that this was the case. Surely those types of people must feel bad. But it made me feel, listening to Errol Chris's story, like it made me feel sad. Like there's hundreds of boxers that this has probably happened, and that was one of the overarching themes of that story, that tale, was how Errol Christie was starting to, in his mind, he knew his body was breaking down, and this was kind of that moment where he had to do something with it. He had to make a moment out of it, and unfortunately, his body just didn't allow him to.
Well, Joni Mitchell once said, on and on and on again, you don't know what you got until it's gone. And I feel like in boxing, we never appreciate a fighter until we realize that they're no longer that fighter. And what better example is you read the memoir and then you find out just what this fight kind of meant.
So in summary of this episode, I just really want to get a final synopsis from yourself about what you now perceive this moment in time, this fight, this build up to actually be, and obviously the societal racial issues that were going on at that time. Given that you didn't know anything about this going into covering this episode and being part of this after show and listening to that tale, what has it now left you feeling in your mind about this particular tale of Mark Kaler and Errol Christie and the UK in the mid-1980s, of course?
Well, I can't really comment on the UK in the mid-1980s because it's always going to seem fantastical to me, because it's going to seem romanticized because it's so exotic compared to what I know. Though I understand racism was an element, I think racism is going to happen everywhere because people are going to look at the way they look and see another person that looks different and not see the common traits of them. They're going to look, oh, I don't like the way that, because I'm the classic guy that everyone growing up, a lot of people go, oh, I just can't stand that guy. Even though I'm a white guy, I was always, oh, that guy's the worst, you know? So I get it. There's going to be people that wake up out of bed, drink a cup of coffee, and just hate you for who you are. What this fight is to me, and the takeaway for this fight, is people can be really awful, and boxing can exude both the best aspects of life but the worst. So when boxing gets it right, it really has overarching themes of our work, professional life, and the journey we are on as people. When it gets it wrong, it exudes some of the deficiencies of human beings as a whole, which is division, hatred, and bigotry. A fight like this that's built around hatred and bigotry, I think it will always, to me, I think that we could take a step further. Political campaigns that are run on hatred and bigotry, fights that are run on hatred and bigotry, will always have a sore spot for me, because I just can't stand the concept of dividing people as opposed to uniting people. So that is the lasting impact of this fight for me, is an ugly time in which people were divided more, although I think they're still divided, but more so, and the comfort of division out in the open.
And a great way to bring an end to this episode, this after show on the tale of Mark Kaler versus Errol Christie. Thank you, as always, to Luke who will have his final little bit of housekeeping in a moment. But for everybody else listening, thank you for listening. Please make sure you subscribe to us on Apple or on Spotify or any available podcasting app out there. You can follow us at Legend Night Pod on Twitter, or you can find us at BTR Boxing Podcast Network on any available social media platform. Just type it in. We are there. All of our content goes out on there across the network, whether it's this show, Dark Side of Boxing, Career Profiles. It is all on the BTR Boxing Podcast Network. Luke, just a final one from you. If anybody wants to find the work that you do at ProBox TV or your own YouTube channel, where can they do that?
So big fights, go to ProBox TV. I got a Patty Donovan thing coming out this week and some others. LukeyBoxing.substack.com. I've got a Substack. We got exclusive podcasts on there. My writing's on there. You can go to my YouTube channel, LukeyBoxing, and also Fights ATW. I write about prospects that any other website wouldn't want. So if you want to read about smaller, lesser known American fighters, sometimes British fighters, sometimes Irish fighters, go there. That's me.
And that is it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the after show of Legendary Nights on the BTR Boxing Podcast Network.
Oh! Wonderful shot by Lennox Lewis!
A right hand by Holyfield!
By Buster Douglas! Look at this! He's knocked Mike Tyson down for the first time in his career!
But unfortunately, it'll never happen.
Front! Punches! It punches! And it's over!
I think it's gonna be over.
I have to say, there seems an element of genuine hate between these two, Ambrose.
For sure. I don't hate the man.
Just imagine if you bought a ticket. Stop it, Frank. You can stop it any time.
Castillo's in trouble. Weeks steps in, and the fight is over.
Oh!
Podcast Network.